The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly, week one of the Premier League. And what do we know? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's job is safe this week as United thrash Chelsea. Elsewhere, the Liverpool and Manchester City procession begins. VAR works, but is that good? And how much do we want to talk about the offside and handball laws? Also, Harry Kane can score in August. Ashley Barnes is better than we think he is. And everybody likes Graham Potter. Shock news north of the border as Celtic and Rangers are 1-2 in Scotland, while all eyes, or some eyes, or no eyes turn to the European Super Cup on Wednesday between Liverpool and Chelsea. In Istanbul. We'll do all that, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel today. John Bruin, happy new season to you.
Happy new season to you.
How are Macclesfield doing? I've not been following them, apologies.
Beat Leighton Orient 3-0 at the weekend.
Oh, massive.
That is massive.
Oh, God, I sounded sarcastic, well, and I apologise.
If I'm correct, that's a bigger win than any they had last season. So, Sol continues to impress.
Oh, marvellous. Faker Others, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Max.
How are filthy, dirty Luton getting on?
Well, we've got 1 point, and we've played well in both games, so I'm happy. Late winner for Cardiff of the weekend.
I mean, at this stage of the season, it's not about playing well, it's about results, isn't it?
No, not with
our
start.
Are you going to go straight back down again?
No, we're not.
Okay. Hey, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
After not seeing you for quite a while, it's like I see you every day now again.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not unpleasurable.
It's the life you have chosen.
Did I choose it or did it choose me?
Well, you're in it. You're living it. It may not be your best life, but it's the one you're saddled with.
Okay, then. Manchester United 4, Chelsea 0. Richard Jolly writing, first time United have scored 4 against Chelsea in a league game since 1995. John, was this a 4-0? I mean, I know it was 4-0, but were United 4-0 good or Chelsea 4-0 bad? I watched it and couldn't work it out even by the end.
I don't think you could say either of those teams are going to challenge for the title, and that includes a team that won 4-0. Especially the first half was... for Manchester United, was not a great performance. Chelsea seemed to be picking great holes in them. Tammy Abraham hit the post. But Chelsea, or Frank Lampard's Chelsea, as we should call them throughout the season, showed real weaknesses within the team. It's interesting that Frank Lampard began the season... He's talking already about how he can't make excuses about not being able to buy players, while also making excuses about not being able to buy players, which he did 3 times during his press conference yesterday. Kurt Zouma made that mistake early on for the Rashford penalty, and at that point Chelsea sort of fell apart a bit, really, didn't they? There were decent signs for Chelsea. I thought Mason Mount was decent. Tammy Abraham looked a little raw. But when you've got a team where you couldn't actually buy any players and you've sold Eden Hazard, it's going to be a tough season for Chelsea. That's the view I took from it.
Baz, obviously you said Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not going to be there by Christmas. Have you got a big humble pie ready for when Ole lifts the Premier League title?
It was a good performance from them yesterday. I wouldn't read a huge amount into it. I think it was more important for Ollie to win that game than it was for his opposite number, Frank. I think he would have been under a lot of pressure, just, you know, if United had lost. And I would imagine he went to bed last night a very relieved man. It was a kind of weird game because you asked John, were Chelsea 4-0 bad, were Manchester United 4-0 good? And I think in certain areas of the pitch you could say yes to both questions. Chelsea were very good for the first half, I thought, created a lot of chances and could conceivably have been ahead at halftime, but United were ultimately more clinical with their finishing, and the Chelsea collapse in the second half helped them no end, obviously. But it was an interesting game.
I was trying to work out, Faye, if I was sort of watching it and thinking, if this was Bournemouth v Southampton, you know, this, I was trying to work out how good these teams were. And I was worried that I was thinking, I meant to think they're not very good, so I've decided that they're not very good, so this is a game of low quality.
but actually I might be completely wrong. I was basically confused for most of it.
I think the biggest problem is that everybody wants to analyse what's going to happen for the rest of the season just off one game, and it's the opening game for both of them. And
so where will they finish?
No, I'm not going to answer that because it's ridiculous to even predict that this time of the season. Just as everybody was writing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer off, and what did you say, December? I heard some people saying November that he'd
it's
be gone.
November, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I'm pleased for him that he's kind of proved everybody wrong. But to be under pressure after the first game seems a little bit ridiculous. And he spent big money in the transfer window, bought in two defenders and kept a clean sheet, so that's
you can't say he's proved everybody wrong after
not
just
yet
one game.
Yeah, that's very true. Just turn my argument right back on me. That's absolutely true. But also, you know, you could apply the same logic with Frank Lampard, because you know he is going to have a tough season, as John said, but it is going to be a progression of how he gets these players working together. And he started with youth. Both of them have put a lot of emphasis on youth in this opening game. But I think that there were positives to take from both teams. Obviously, Chelsea came off worst in this opener, but I thought that United were really good. I thought there were flashes of brilliance from Pogba. We know that he can turn up some days, other days not. You know, that's going to be crucial as to whether they keep hold of him. Obviously, there's still time for him to potentially leave. Martial pointing to the number 9 on his back, you know, clearly that was something that had been sticking in his mind for a while. He's got that number 9 shirt back, and I thought he was decent in parts as well. And then Wan-Bissaka and Maguire were quality in defence. But Chelsea still have big players to come back. You know, there was no Rudiger, for example, no Willian. So I think you can't judge both teams on this opening performance, but probably Manchester United, you know, that there are more positives to take from them.
Maguire, 7 clearances, most in the game, 4 interceptions. John, most in the game. He was dribbled past no times.
Well, it was an imperious performance, really, wasn't it? He will face a tougher test than poor Tammy Abraham, it has to be said. But in terms of, you could see him cajoling other players. Jose Mourinho, now the world's star pundit, made pointed reference at halftime actually to the fact that he kept coming across to sweep up mistakes by Luke Shaw, as will always happen if you are with Luke Shaw. Maybe there's an agenda there, I'm not sure.
So I love the fact that Jose is still bullying Luke Shaw even though he's not there.
Yeah, exactly. But Maguire's, he looked like the player that United have needed for so long, and you know the player that, as well as being a good defender, adds organisation, leadership, bringing the ball out of defence, and at times it meant that the midfield was, it looked stronger as well, and Pogba playing that deep lying role.
And that pass Pogba played for the Rashford goal was just, it was delightful, wasn't it?
Well, that is what Manchester United paid £89 million for and have seen only fleetingly. And it was actually played in a slightly different position, which was deeper than we've seen him before, rather than that left-hand side of midfield position that he seems to favour. Pogba, at times, was still frustrating, but that's what you're signing for, those moments.
Joel says, is it possible to dislike Daniel James? Is he more lovable than a young Javier Hernandez? Will he be the next Solskjaer, Baz?
I think for the time being, it is impossible to dislike him, particularly if you've seen the video on YouTube where his girlfriend surprises him on his birthday. And he comes home from training or whatever, does the usual, throws his keys onto one side, walks into the lounge room, and there's balloons everywhere, and he clocks them, and it's happy birthday, Dan, in, you know, spelt out in helium balloons, which is really nice. And then he does a double take when he notices a little Labrador puppy. I think it's a Labrador, just a tiny little puppy with a ribbon round its neck, waiting. That's his birthday present. And he immediately falls in love with the puppy. And, you know, he's had a tough summer. He's secured this massive move, a huge step in his career. He's lost his dad, who died suddenly, which must have been an enormous trauma at what should have been one of the high points of his life. And for him to come on and score a brilliant goal on his debut is wonderful for him, and he deserves it.
It was a great moment, and it actually reminded of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's own debut against Blackburn in 1996, where he came on, scored, I think it was a rebound goal, and celebrated it with a similar joy at the opposite end of the pitch, actually.
Yeah, he said it was a different thing celebrating at the Stretford end for Daniel James.
Yeah, well, and also Daniel James will have celebrated with his family because his family sit up at that end, the Stretford end. So a perfect moment for him.
Chelsea started, as you said, Faye, a lot of youth. Their youngest 11 in 7 years. First league starts for Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, after five season-long loan spells between them. Abraham getting on the pitch for Chelsea in the league for the first time since May 2016. Harizi says, how many full moons before Lampard is sacked? Richard, how long do you reckon Mourinho's third spell as Chelsea manager will be?
For me, the absolute highlight of that game was Jose joining the ranks of the Einsteins to working as a pundit on Sky. It was terrific. He seems to be engaged in this exercise of rebranding himself as like a real nice guy. I'm not sure I'm buying it yet, but it's certainly good value and good entertainment. I mean, there was this clip on Sky a week or two ago where he's standing in a harbour being interviewed, and he's talking about the solitude of being a football manager, and he's coming over all Yoda in the swamp. I need my loneliness. I think the football manager on many occasions is a lonely man. Lonely with his thoughts, lonely with his feelings, lonely with his decisions. You can have your staff, but the key word is decision-making. Only one man makes the decisions.
Does that explain why he lived in a hotel for 2 years?
He also just couldn't help himself making a dig, could he, about Harry Maguire. Said, you know, it was an impressive debut from him, but, you know, he arrived too late. Hmm. You know, it's exactly what he wanted.
I like a Yoda Mourinho. Yeah. Poor positioning Luke Shaw has. and I also liked him v Souness, because, you know, Souness is the man, right?
The alpha male.
He is the alpha in that room, and slightly different when Jose's there.
There was a point where it was Carragher, Neville, Souness, Mourinho. How much alpha can you get in one room?
Liverpool 4, Norwich 1, opening game of the season. All the excitement for the first game. Norwich playing, you know, looked like they played nice attacking football. That own goal, Faye, you were just like, should we just go to the next game now?
I felt so sorry for Grant Hanley, but it was picked up on commentary that his body language really didn't help his young defenders, because he literally was on his haunches with his head in his hands for a good couple of minutes. It's like, you've got to get back up. Come on, this is early in the game.
I'm not sure. I sort of think you're allowed to be annoyed if you've...
Yeah, be annoyed, bad. But you don't need to show... You don't need to show everybody. You've got to get your head right back in the game again. And I just think he pondered on it a little bit too long.
He has just scored an own goal, you know, 7 minutes into the first game of the season. Yeah, maybe. I mean, what side do you sit of this fence? I think you're allowed to go, oh, damn it.
I think he should have pulled off his shirt, swung it around his head and ran towards the cop, giving it the big un.
It would have been great. It's unlikely, but it would have been good. They looked good going forward, didn't they, John? But you've got to defend. You actually, like Fulham last year, forgot to defend.
Yes, they did.
And Norwich seemed to take that ploy.
Well, these days, managers come up to the Premier League with this idea of, we aren't going to change the way we're going to play. Sheffield United actually did adjust their play a little bit, but Norwich just went for it, and which was so successful them last season at Liverpool, the European champions. That's probably a risk that's not going to pay off. But during that game, one of the leading issues that came out of it was Liverpool's fans' panic at how difficult their team found it against Norwich's attackers. So there were, just as there were for Frank Lampard, positive to take. For Norwich.
And is that a worry for Liverpool? I mean, you come off winning 4-1. Do you? Because I was watching that thinking, they don't. They do look to be being cut open by Norwich, and if Norwich can, then other teams should be able to.
Norwich got in behind two or three times in the opening 25 minutes. They had some decent chances and should have scored a couple of goals in the first half. Is it Reaperman?
Steeperman.
Steeperman.
Marco Steeperman.
The Reaper Man was a wrestler, wasn't he?
I don't know. 90s WWE. I think
it was. Yeah, Marco Steeperman, the Reaper Man. with more confidence, I think he should have scored at least one, if not two goals. Mm. And yeah, it would be a source of concern for Liverpool that how easily Norwich were able to get in behind them. And, you know, I wouldn't criticise Norwich too much. Yes, they made a few defensive errors, but they couldn't have been handed a more tricky fixture, really, further return to the Premier League than an away trip to Anfield.
And I think that's the argument, is that, you know, people are criticising the newly promoted teams for having a go. But actually, when you're handed Liverpool as your opening game of the season, you're already thinking, OK, well, that's probably not one we're going to mark down for a win. So why not go for it? Because you don't know if they'd have been on the front foot, which they were at the beginning of the first half, is unlucky with the own goal. But, you know, if they'd have got the early goal, that could have put the wobbles into Liverpool. And then they've got a bit of a chance. So I could see what Daniel Farke was trying to do there.
You've seen them certainly more than I have. Mm. Watching them, I thought, oh, I'm looking forward to when I see them play, because it'll be fun, right?
Yeah, they're great fun to watch. They're a fantastic, fantastic team. I really like Daniel Farke and what he's doing. The players buy into what he's doing. He loves his team. He's got the arm around them, but the passion, and supports them all the way. They had 5 shots on target when I was looking at the stats, which is more than any other team have had at Anfield last season. So, you know, that is something to be proud of, I would say. And they certainly didn't disgrace themselves.
I don't think the importance of that goal they scored could be overstated either, because that is going to give Teemu Pukki a huge, huge amount of confidence to get off the mark in his first game at Anfield with a good finish. That will do him no end of good.
How big a blow is losing Alisson, John?
Well, it is a blow because he seems to be out for a few weeks.
4 to 8, we think, calf injury.
Yeah, and calf injuries are those ones that they're never quite sure about. Adrian of West Ham fame is suddenly thrust into the limelight, thrust into a European Super Cup final. Well, it's not really a final, it's just a game. I think there are a couple of other injuries to goalkeepers, and then there's got this Andy Lonergan guy who they had on a 0 hours contract over the summer, who was released by Middlesbrough last season. It looks like he'll get another deal, which is good. You know, opportunities are coming.
Is Simon Mignolet secretly seething over in Belgium?
Probably.
At Club Bruges, yeah.
Yeah, Lonergan played 207 games for Preston, his boyhood club, before going to Leeds, Bolton, Fulham, Wolves, Leeds again, Middlesbrough, last playing on loan for Rochdale. I mean, it is a weird part of football, the sort of third keeper. You know, Scott Carson at City, again, it's
Richard Wright, his predecessor, yeah, at City. Yeah. Just
the Ross Turnbull, Stuart Taylor role.
I think you have to be a certain mindset to play that role, and if you're happy enough to do it, is there a greater job going? It's just like money for rope.
It almost feels like someone's going to go into coaching after that, doesn't it? Because that's pretty much what you're there to do.
Is it a lonelier role than Jose Mourinho's being a manager? That's the question.
Well, the thing is, as third keeper, you do sort of you do a lot of crosses in the warm-up, don't you? So that is a thing. You know, you can sort of perfect your delivery from when you go and play vets outfield football. And you're right, Barry, you get a lot amount of money that you'd get for doing just nothing.
Well, you turn up for training
just
every day.
Shows your mindset, you two.
There's no pressure.
No. If we have to do something, babe.
If you're getting towards the end of your career, it's great. It'd be perfect.
But then you end up in a situation where, do you remember Hilario that he played for Chelsea?
Mm, yes.
He would occasionally reappear and live up to his name. You know, it's just one of those. Yeah, I mean, poor old Andy Lonergan. Imagine if Adrian picks up an injury.
But I hope he does it. I really like Adrian, and I'm really pleased that he's been given. Yes,
I'm not
this
wishing ill on Adrian. I just want to see Andy Lanigan playing.
Let's not wish ill, but it wouldn't be a bad thing in the Super Cup if Adrian got sent off after 5 minutes and Lonergan had to come on. Jed Rea, Liverpool statistician, saying Divock Origi now becomes the 13th player in history to score for Liverpool on all 7 days of the week. A question from the McGinns, and could Origi actually be good?
Well, I recall when Origi was signed and they had to wait a year for him to sign, and it was a point when, I think it was just after they'd sold Luis Suarez, that he was regarded as, well, maybe we could get him early and this could save everything. And I saw him play in a Merseyside derby once and him be absolutely excellent during that game, but then pick up an injury and he disappeared pretty much until he became this David Fairclough style super sub that he is now. And he is now a cult hero at Anfield, and all credit to him, he's waited his time. He's doing really well.
All right, you mentioned Timu Pukki has scored with his, this is up to Joe, has scored with his first shot on target in each of the last 8 seasons across Schalke, Celtic, Bromby, and Norwich as well. You know, that is very impressive, isn't it? And Pukki is the first Finnish player to score a goal in the Premier League since who?
Jari Litmanen?
Nope.
I'm all out of Finns.
I was going to say Jussi Jäskeläinen.
Nope.
No.
I actually heard this the other day and now I can't remember. I'm rubbish. You know my memory is appalling.
Mm-hmm. Sami Hipia, December 2008. It's been 11 years for the Finns. They've had to wait. Another one from Up to Joe about Onel Hernandez, the first Cuban player to appear in the Premier League, with Cuba the 114th different nationality represented in Premier League history. Would you like the first of each nationality now, the 113?
No.
Or should we move on? And Mo Salah is nice, isn't he? Did everyone see the nice picture of a fan desperate to have a photo with him that he ran into a lamppost and got a bleeding face?
I'm one of those cruel people. When someone walks into a lamppost, or I'm the first person, I will go over, but my first instinct is to laugh, which is dreadful. That poor child was half crying, half smiling in that photo.
I don't think there's anyone on earth who doesn't laugh when someone walks into a lamppost.
It's one of those things that's funny because it's happened to somebody else.
It's happened to me. I think that's why I find it funny. And I've laughed at myself when I've done it. So.
Would you do a selfie with them after they'd walked into a lamppost, though?
Would I do a selfie with them?
Well, no, someone walks into a lamppost, Mo Salah's reaction was to probably laugh and then do a selfie.
And then do
him.
A selfie. Yeah. Well, I think that's the least he owed the kid.
West Ham 0, Manchester City 5. Pep called them sloppy after the game. Barry, do you want a short VAR chat?
Well, VAR was involved and it got the decisions correct. John was at the game. I know he has thoughts on the subject, so probably best to hand over to him.
Over to you, John, your thoughts.
I was there at West Ham in the stands. I was with my mate's dad, Brian, who's been a West Ham fan for 70 years.
Oh, great.
Good thing that Brian said to me at half-time, as he said, well, what I do know now is that we won't get relegated. So high hopes for the season from Brian. But as we sat there and the VAR was going on, it was a pretty confusing experience. Now, the London Stadium is one of those places where they do have video screens, but only one of the decisions was shown, and that was the penalty that was retaken where they showed Declan Rice encroaching. The rest of it was a sort of situation where it says VAR, and it appears, and everyone sort of turns and looks, and then you wait. And then there was one bit where it said VAR, red card. And we're thinking, well, what's this for? And it seemed there'd been a collision between. And it as a fan experience, it is unsatisfactory compared to, say, attending Wimbledon or cricket, rugby union, rugby league, you name it. I believe that one of the reasons they don't show some of the decisions is to do with the fact that they may cause ructions in the crowd. And that suggests that football isn't a game suited to showing the decisions. It's an imperfect system. As a fan, I think even in the director's box, they don't see these things. Unless you're a journalist sat there with a TV screen, which of course you don't get at every ground, you're not going to see this stuff. And there was this the slight delay as well. football grounds aren't what they used to be, where there's fervour all the way through the games, people singing. It just added to that overall sort of sense of ennui, I suppose, that you can't really celebrate a goal until it's been given by VAR. Weird. I'm sure we'll get used to it.
There's like a murmur that goes around the ground, yeah. Isn't there? Yeah. Like everyone just kind of has a little bit of a pause. But I went to Stockley Park to do the VAR
workshop. Oh, you've been brainwashed by the...
Not brainwashed, because there were plenty there were plenty of questions being posed, and they admitted that things weren't perfect. And the main thing that they said was that they call it the in-stadia experience. That is...
That's a work in progress.
A definite work in progress. Okay. And they understand that. How they can make it better, I don't know. But, when you look at what's happened in other sports, it's taken them a long time. But how long has it taken them to make it work?
In rugby league, I was chatting to a rugby league fan the other day, and they were saying that there was a point where decisions were taking so long that the rugby league have decided to have to speed this up, because people were sitting there, and going for a drink or something because it was taking so long to come to these decisions. One thing actually I did like before the game, and of course not every stadium will have this because they don't have a video, was Alan Shearer performing this primer.
What?
Well, when you used to get VHS cassettes from the video shop?
Well,
This may contain sexual swear words. Alan Shearer performed something like that, explaining VAR. Now, Alan Shearer used to be a VAR skeptic, but something has convinced him that this thing can work.
Well, a lot of media types and ex-players and managers seem to have gone through the Stockley Park experience. Faye was there. They may have wiped her mind, but I got the impression that everyone who's there, it's like in A Clockwork Orange, where they just hold your eyes open and subject you to relentless views of decisions that are correct, and then while whispering in your ear that everything VAR is good, VAR is good.
Actually got to have a go at it, actually the most interesting side of it, because you realise how much is going on and why this has to be introduced. Because for the on-field referee who... all decisions are ultimately up to them. They have so much to contend with that having another pair of eyes and ears, it is invaluable, I would say, in the game nowadays. What they have to do is reduce the amount of time it takes to do those decisions and let people know what's going on. That's the biggest problem.
Barry, do you want to go to the Stockley Park? I've been invited and been given a plus one. I've been asked specifically, do you want to go?
I'll go. Yeah, I was invited myself, but I was away on holiday, so I couldn't make it.
I recommend it. It was a real eye-opener.
Yeah.
That there's definitely, things that have to be changed and made better, and they're aware of that, but it was very interesting to see it from the other side.
A question from Marcel Sahail, saying, what did Max have to do for his proper football man club initiation ceremony? He must have been inducted, given his comments about offside. This is my obsession, that the Sterling one should be given, and I know there will always be marginal cause that will always happen wherever the line is, and I don't think it should be daylight, which was never a law, I know that, but I'd like it to be the front foot, the toe of the front foot or the heel of the front foot is where the line is. I think it's too weighted in favour of the defence at the moment. You can all call me stupid if you like.
I'd say speak to the IFAB. That's not VAR.
No, it's not a VAR problem, but VAR has exposed the offside law to be
agree with you. Tim Stillman, friend of the show, said on Twitter over the weekend, and he was absolutely spot on, that the offside rule, was introduced to benefit the spirit of the game. But when it's being applied so rigorously now, and VAR has, highlighted its shortcomings, and it's not ideal, but I don't see how any of your suggestions would work either. And Jonathan Wilson as well has made the point, when it's that tight, how can they be sure when the ball was passed?
Yeah.
Well, they replay it.
Because Wilson even
it's
over
the contact. It's the contact. It's the contact. Yeah, but that's what they show. So they slow it down on like an edit system. So they slow it down, to where the contact is, and that's the moment that they then put all the lines.
But Wilson like has pointed 3D. Out that the frames are not quick enough. Well,
no, but I mean, you're talking.
But Wilson was talking about HD. Now he's obviously never got Ultra HD down at his Wandsworth Palace. but Dale Johnson, my friend, former colleague, who is the VAR expert. He took Jonathan to task on Twitter.
Oh, right.
And said, the Hawkeye operative doesn't press pause. He selects usually three frames from the offside incident to pinpoint the first point of contact on the boot of the passer with the ball.
Okay. Well, I want to move on from VAR. It's obviously something we'll talk about again, probably when we discuss Leicester Wolves in about 5 minutes. You were there. I mean, City are relentless. I was thinking about Liverpool and City and the fact that teams can keep up with them for 15 minutes or for 20 minutes or a half an hour, but if you are chasing the ball that much, you are just going to get tired and eventually you're going to get overrun.
Yeah, in watching City, I see something that I've not really seen from a team, certainly in English football, which is it's almost as if they allowed West Ham to feel as if they were doing well, yet still holding them at arm's length. Now, West Ham didn't have a shot until Edison pulled up that late double save, by which point the game had run away completely from West Ham. But it's just...
Well, it was 2-0 at that time, so it could have changed. They got their third just after, I take your point.
You always felt City could score again. Just their control. Rodri looks custom-made to play in that Manchester City team. It was a pretty devastating performance and pretty depressing for everybody else, I would have said.
And how you get a different view of a game when you're there? I mean, just watching Sterling, because he could win the Golden Boot now, couldn't he? And considering what his finishing was like a few years ago, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously seen Sterling from, you know, his breakthrough 6-7 years ago. He was always a player that, one of those players that raised you out of your feet, out of your seat, because of the sort of speed with which he was operating.
I mean, raising out of your feet would be even more impressive, wouldn't it?
That would be very impressive. Painful too. But he now glides rather than it was a bit more of a scurrier. They've obviously worked on that, and the finishing is all there now. Actually, the third goal in particular, I mean, the second was superb, that little lob, but the third goal, just the precision and the confidence with which he finished it. Manchester City have a player, an English player, who already looks nailed on to be one of the best of the season.
Also, whenever West Ham looked like doing anything, there was an awful lot of that niggly tactical fouling that Pep insists Manchester City do not employ as a deliberate tactic.
I mean, that is something that Pellegrini's talked about. So how do you stop that? I mean,
the thing is, this is the precision of the City team, is that they have worked it out, presumably in training. I don't know that, but they've worked out that you can foul someone in this area, you can make this foul, and you won't get booked for it. They made 8 fouls in the first half, didn't receive a booking.
Do you think refs will get wise to it? I mean, that's the idea. All the opposition managers are saying this, presumably, to make referees go, oh, actually, maybe we should book somebody. I guess you can't, can you? Can you book a player as a sort of like team fouling? Do they do it? So you've done one foul, I'll do one foul, I'll do one foul.
Well, it's like when Jose Mourinho had his rotational fourth official badgering, you know, so various members of his staff would take turns to harass and harangue the fourth official.
Or when Gary and Phil Neville double team, you know, Jose Antonio Reyes 15 years ago or so. You know, cynicism is part of the game. There is that cynical edge to Manchester City. The one thing is that you try and question Manchester City, they will plead innocence, as they're always likely to do.
The last time West Ham picked up a point in August, 21st of that month, 2016, when they beat Bournemouth. But as Brian said, they're not going to get relegated.
No, Brian's right, I say.
That'll do for part one. Part two will begin at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Welcome to part two, the Guardian Football Weekly. Spurs 3, Aston Villa 1. Baz, I thought this was a great game. So unlike the Liverpool and City games, it could have gone either way. Villa, defended stoically. Heaton was great. Mings was great. Tottenham deserved to win, but they had to fight for it.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with any of that. Harry Kane scored two goals, two lovely first touches, actually, and proved he can score in August. Relief all round for Tottenham Hotspur fans. Jack Grealish had an interesting coiffure, which helped highlight him giving away the ball, which led to one of Tottenham's goals. But I thought he had a very good game. I was very impressed with him. His long overdue debut at White Hart Lane. He's been getting a lot of criticism because, I don't know what the stat is, Aston Villa have now lost 20-odd games in the Premier League in a row with him playing in the team, as if it's...
19 is a number, Barry.
As if it's 19, only down to him.
As if it's in some way entirely his fault, which, you know, it's just one of those ludicrous, unfortunate statistics. Gareth Bale had a similar thing at Tottenham where he didn't finish on the winning team in the Premier League for a very, very long time.
And whatever happened to him?
Yes.
Well, that's a good question, actually.
He became a golfer, didn't he?
But yeah, it was a good game. Aston Villa gave a very good account of themselves. I wouldn't say they've anything to worry about, much like West Ham. But it was a tough introduction to the Premier League for them, and I thought they handled themselves very well.
After the game, Pochettino didn't want to say it was really important that Christian Eriksen came on. Presumably, he thought it was important enough to bring him on.
Yeah, Faye. It was important. He absolutely changed the game. And you do wonder what's going on behind the scenes at Tottenham. Kieran Trippier alluded to it when he left. You've got Eriksen, Rose and Alderweireld all wanting to leave. Vertonghen on the bench.
Not even on the bench.
Wasn't even on the bench. Right, well, I mean, what is going on? You've got cryptic messages from Poch pre-season as well. But then Eriksen comes on and clearly he still wants to do his best for his side. But is that because he's, you know, making his mark for a move still and there's still time for him to leave? Or is he back fully committed to Tottenham? But whatever is the case, he played well and he turned the game for them.
Jack Pitbrook from somewhere called The Athletic. Spurs without Eriksen, 12 shots in 64 minutes. With him, 19 shots in 26 minutes. Is there a crisis at Tottenham? I mean, it's weird, John, because they've signed Lo Celso, they've signed Sessegnon, they've signed Ndombele, who's scored that lovely goal. But you feel there is something slightly wrong there, but it's hard to put your finger on it.
It's more stuff behind the scenes than it is with the team, I'd say. What I would say about Eriksen is that if it was between him and Pogba of players you would expect to leave by the end of the European transfer window, Eriksen would have to be favourite at this point. If he can find somewhere to go, he couldn't be more clear, really, that he wants to go. I think Tottenham, that first half, were a little ragged, but you have to play credit to Aston Villa's performance, which was, as we said before, that teams that come up have decided not to just go out and defend. I think that Tottenham will be fine. Tottenham will be top four. There's little doubt about that. I think the way that Pochettino is, the way that he leaves stuff hanging in the air, and the fact that the relationship that he has with Daniel Levy, which has been close, might not be as close as it was at the moment. That's something to look out for, because Pochettino is a manager that the top clubs in Europe are going to look for at a certain point. And let's face it, he isn't going to be Spurs manager forever, but he's still a great coach. And Spurs have, if you look at the players you mentioned they brought in, they've got a stronger squad than last season.
Can you see them trying to keep Eriksen, even though that would mean they wouldn't get any money from him? It's not a very Daniel Levy thing to do. He's not the sort of player who would, you know, down tools, is he?
I think Daniel Levy is the absolute key there. You cast your mind back to Modric years ago, where they pretty much cashed him in at this point, actually, in August. I would see that. I mean, the thing is that the money they're purportedly asking from Manchester United for a player out of contract in a year was 65 million, which is a very Daniel Levy price. It is possible that he might price himself out of it.
I thought Kyle Walker-Peters had a good game as well, as, you know, the worry about Spurs right back. And John McGinn as well, who scored the goal. Looks like a very good player as well.
Oh, he's a great player.
When Kyle Walker-Peters is sold to Manchester City, do they have a player called Kyle Walker-Peters Johnson or something
they,
like that?
They might not have a Kyle Walker by that point.
Yeah.
Well, no, Spurs will just keep finding.
Yeah, just keep adding an extra certain.
Yeah, there's actually talk this morning that Serge Aurier is angling for a move away because he's sort of resigned to the fact that he won't get a look in because of the sort of rise to prominence of Kyle Walker-Peters. Hmm.
And it'd be fascinating to see how Spurs do at City on Saturday, won't it? I mean, does anybody...
do you think? Of course they will. Everyone will.
Everyone will, yeah. You're probably right.
Might as well just stop now.
Yeah. Newcastle 0, Arsenal 1. Arsenal started with Joe Willock and Reece Nelson, both 19, and the three behind Aubameyang. Ceballos, Pepe and Martinelli all came off the bench to make their debuts. Important for them to get that win, Faye. Yeah. What did you make of it?
Well, I was slightly disappointed, if I'm honest, not to see all the Arsenal signings starting, because they had the best transfer window, I thought, of everybody. And I was a little bit disappointed by that. I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't go out all guns blazing. But, you know, a good solid win against Newcastle. But you kind of, with what they did in the transfer market, you were expecting them to really, you know, show what they were made of under Unai Emery this season. And I kind of didn't feel that. I wasn't that excited. It wasn't that, you know, I thought Newcastle played quite well.
It seemed to be some sort of experimental, you know...
like prog rock football match.
Yeah, Carabao Cup team from Emery maybe was trying to prove something to the owners or something like that. Arsenal do seem to be blooding youngsters. One of them is Ainsley Maitland-Niles. He's been around a while, actually. He set up the goal, played very well. That does appear to be the direction which Emery is pushing. But I do agree, actually, we should... it would be good to see those signings come in. But then again, Arsenal are particularly front-loaded with forward talent. And if you're going to throw a couple of youngsters in there as well, they're even more front-loaded than we thought.
But if you're front-loaded, you should be scoring more than one goal up at St James's Park, I would say.
Yes, I agree. But I suppose you have to credit Newcastle's defence and their centre of midfield with a bit of that. But it wasn't. But the thing is, the stat is Arsenal won and kept a clean sheet in their opening game for the first time since 2008-09. So that's pretty good.
Off the pitch, the boycott, Barry, didn't materialise that much. Was it 48,000? 52,000?
Nah, I think a few people stayed away, not many. There was a half-hour protest outside where about 300 fans maybe marched from Sports Direct to the stadium. And
that's not very far, you know.
Yeah, and waved some banners half-heartedly outside a burger van. So, not a good start for Steve Bruce. He named three players in centre midfield, Sean Longstaff, Jonjo Shelvey and Isaac Hayden. Both Longstaff and Shelvey were forced off with injury. On the bench, Mr. Bruce had two centre-backs, a winger, a striker, a left-back and a right-back. No midfielders. He sent on Jethro Williams, in place of Shelvey. Williams wasn't sure whether he was supposed to be playing in midfield or as a wing back. And it was a mix up between him and Paul Dummett that led to the winner. So Steve Bruce didn't cover himself in glory there. According to Louise Taylor's match report, at one point he could be heard shouting, waving his arms, going, "What the fuck is going on?" Which is kind of the whole Newcastle experience in a nutshell, really.
It's quite good, honest management, though. As opposed to, you know, the modern way of putting your hand over your mouth and whispering something, yelling it at the top of your voice is glorious.
Yeah, I think he sent on Willems, and it was for his debut. I think he was supposed to play left wing back, and Matt Ritchie was supposed to go into centre midfield as cover for Shelvey, who departed, but Willems decided he was playing in midfield. So the instructions weren't made clear. He misunderstood his instructions. But anyway, yeah, it was and a bit of slackness on the ball from him led to the goal. So not a great debut for him.
On Friday,
but to credit Newcastle, I did think they played quite well in the first half, and they were on top for at least half an hour, I'd say.
On Friday night, Arsenal released a statement saying Mesut Ozil and Saïd Kolasinac will not be part of the squad for the opening game against Newcastle following further security incidents which are being investigated by the police. Two men were arrested outside Ozil's house on Thursday. They were charged under the Public Order Act, due to appear in court next month. This follows the incident on the 25th of July when Kolasinac fought off two men who were brandishing knives. It's just a very it's a bigger story than sort of anything else that's happening, that two players can't do their job because...
Yeah, I was over in Germany a couple of weeks ago, and the Ozil story was front page on just about every newspaper. Quite amazing. We can't really say too much because obviously someone's been charged in relation to it. But again, that confused the picture for Unai Emery picking his team.
Watford 0, Brighton 3. This was the result, Faye, that I think most people were surprised about on the opening day of the season. Graham Potter has a lot of fans. Didn't start any of his new players. Wanted to give opportunities to the people who'd been with him all pre-season. That's a great, great result, isn't it?
Fantastic result for him. Really pleased. If I'm honest, I was one of the doubters. I thought Watford would cruise this. Not just be close. I thought they'd cruise it. And, you know, he bringing on Andone and Morpie in the second half changed the game for them again, put extra pressure on Watford. Pleased for Andone because, you know, he's going to have to step up as Glenn Murray gets older.
Not even older by the day.
No, I know. as that was coming out of my mouth, I felt awful saying it. And then, you know, brilliant for Morpie, who's going to have to prove, you know, that he can step up to the Premier League after being fantastic
for
Brentford.
Do you think he can?
Yeah, I do, especially after that. And you know, you look at a lot of these players and that they're proving their doubters wrong. Billy Sharp, I know we'll come to that in a minute, is another one. You know, there is a lot of pressure on their shoulders when you get promoted and you've been prolific elsewhere. Timu Pukki as well. He was joint highest scorer in the Football League last season, 29 goals in the league. And, you know, everybody's thinking, can he do it in the Premier League? Well, you know, he's got his opening goal. Billy Sharp's got his opening goal. And Neil Morpo's got his.
And I'd say, Bez, that the difference between Potter and Houghton is, had Chris Houghton had Brighton 1-0 up, would he have made the same substitutions?
Absolutely not. And that's not to disparage him, but Chris Houghton has a reputation for being slightly defensive, particularly away from home. And I don't think, you know, he'd have brought on a defender or another midfielder. And it's interesting, actually, that I think both those substitutions, or substitutes when they came on, scored with pretty much the first touch. But yeah, it's refreshing to see. Great performance. I think Potter will be a huge success. He really seems to know what he's doing, and it's interesting because his approach is different to most managers.
There was a really fun moment where Watford wanted a penalty, which actually looked to me like it really could have been given by VAR, and Pereira had his arms behind his back in the way that you can't be aggressive with your arms behind your back, but was then very aggressive, just chasing Craig Pawson around the pitch for about 25 minutes. I really enjoyed it.
Can I pinpoint a crisis club?
Of course.
Watford.
Are they in crisis already?
Yes.
Okay.
Lost 7 of their final 11 games last season. They also had the embarrassment and shame of that FA Cup final. We know that the owners of that club can be trigger happy, though. Javi Gracia appears to be on a 3-year deal, I think it is, to be at the club. Their transfer business was not fantastic. One of the players that they had to keep hold, wanted to keep hold of, Decore, scored an own goal. That was a pretty depressing start to the season for them.
But he was superb last season, Decore.
He was, yes.
And I just think, I think Brighton just shocked them. Not one to defend Watford that often, but I have to say, last season everybody was tipping them to struggle, and yes, they didn't. Look what they did. And, you know, some of their Premier League form towards the end of the season was down to that FA Cup run, I would say. And I think that maybe is the shock that they needed.
I just think that sort of slightly strange vibes coming from Grassier himself in post-match, and Craig Cathcart saying, you know, we need to improve. That's not a good sign on opening day of the season. The vibes...
Yeah, but you can't say, actually, this is pretty much the level.
Well, but the thing is, though, quite a lot of the managers, you'll see them say, well, there are a lot of good signs out there, and that wasn't what was coming from Javi Gracia. So that would be my concern.
But then
concern.
That's an honest assessment then, isn't it? Because they weren't at the game at all. But, you know, that it wasn't yeah, a good game for them. What's the point in him turning around and saying, you know, the positives I take from it are, do you know what, we weren't there.
A lot of managers do that.
Well, yeah, true. I know, but I prefer the honest approach.
Yes,
I like Javi Gracia.
Burnley 3, Southampton 0. Baz, how many times can you say Ashley Barnes doesn't get the credit he deserves before he is getting the credit he deserves by you saying he's not getting the credit he deserves?
37.
Okay, how many times do you reckon we've all done it?
I don't think I've ever done it.
Okay,
but,
do you want to do it now?
I don't think Ashley Barnes gets the credit he deserves.
Okay, 32.
Yeah, I didn't see this result coming, I must say. I thought Southampton would win the game. I thought and still think Burnley will struggle this season. But it was a rotten day up at Turf Moor. The wind was howling, the rain was pouring down. And Burnley were just more up for it than Southampton. Southampton struggled with the conditions. And that benefited Ashley Barnes, but yeah, two goals, fantastic.
I love the way the ball blew over Westergaard's head. That is so Sunday League. I mean, wind is difficult to play in, but you've got to be better than that. Ashley Barnes' double brings his total up to 34 Premier League goals, level with Muzzy, is it, and Peter and Love. And Peterson says, having only just wrapped your head around the fact that Jay Rodriguez was at West Brom, how long will it take Barry and Max to realise he's back at Burnley now?
The thing is, he is a Burnley lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a broad Burnley accent. Actually, another crisis club, Southampton.
Okay.
Not just because they lost 3-0, but a couple of colleagues of mine were at the game again. Bad vibes off Ralph Hasenhüttl. Again, it's to do with the transfer market. Maybe they haven't received the backing that he expected at the club. A few concerns there, I would say.
Leicester nil, Wolves nil. Paul Doyle's, the intro to his report. Question, what could make a 0-0 draw even more unsatisfying than usual? Answer, a goal being celebrated and then disallowed after a VAR review leads to enforcement of the draconian new interpretation of the handball law. So Leander Dendonka thought he'd scored. Poked one in. Into the six-yard box. Afterwards, the ball had hit Willy Bolly's arm, but it was clearly accidental.
Doesn't matter.
Does anybody... I know you've been brainwashed, Men in Black style. Does anybody think, genuinely, that is what should happen? I know it's the law, but like, as a football fan, do you go, actually, I think that's right that was chalked off?
I was watching the trajectory of the ball. This is how sad it's getting. I was watching the trajectory of the ball and whether it changed direction when it hit his arm. And actually, I think it hit his arm, then his head, and went. So, from a personal point of view, I hate the law, but VAR is there to adhere to the law, so you can't hate VAR in that sense.
No, I'm not hating VAR, I'm hating the law.
I hate the law as well. And you're going to see, this is where it's stupid, is the interpretation of the law in the Premier League will be different to the interpretation of the law in the Champions League and Europa League, for example.
Or
that's
in the Women's World Cup or whatever, yeah. Mm. The thing is, that's the law now. It's the correct decision. One of the things with VAR is that they give correct decisions to... What is it? You'll know this, 98%, 99%, is that the...
What, clear and obvious?
Alan Shearer actually, during his video, reads out, as you know, it'll be 98% correct, or whatever, something like that.
They go down with the stats. I don't know, I wasn't that far brainwashed, John,
okay.
I promise you.
Maybe you need a refresher course.
Connor Cody said they'll have to play with their arms chopped off. And there were just 3 shots on target in this game, not including the goal that was disallowed. Wolves made only 2 changes from that team that won 4-0 on Thursday night. at Punic Yerevan in Armenia. Two more games. Bournemouth 1, Sheffield United 1. Is everyone pleased for Billy Sharp, Baz?
Yeah, why good. Not?
apart from Eddie Howe, probably.
Yes.
219 goals in all four divisions,
fair
apparently.
Play. Great.
To the top, top goal scorer in this century in English football, Billy Sharp.
Well love done, it. Billy. That's a great name as well, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a proper old school football so, striker's name.
Sort of Alan Sillitoe novel type of name,
exactly.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Match magazine.
And finally, Palace 0, Everton 0. Wilfried Zaha came on. Anything else to report from that match?
That I'm handshake not sure. was awkward, wasn't it?
Which handshake?
The handshake between Zaha and Hodgson before Zaha came on looked really awkward.
Yeah, I mean, Roy Hodgson can be, he's very memeable, isn't it? I mean, they could have been getting on great and it still could have looked awkward,
yeah,
I guess.
I suppose.
But, Baz, you were about to say?
Well, I just don't understand why he didn't start, unless it was a fitness issue. I mean, if
Hodgson said it was a fitness, but pre-match, he said that because he'd been at the Africa Cup of Nations, because of what was going on Thursday with transfer deadline, his head wasn't there, so he didn't train. And then they did a really light training session on Friday, and that's why he didn't start. That's what Roy Hodgson said.
I'm not sure I'm down with this head not in the right place business. Just get your head in the right place. Train. It'll happen or it won't happen.
All right.
But he did a job, didn't he? When he went on. He's a brilliant player.
And without him, I suspect Palace would be in all sorts of bother, or would be. Could still go.
I don't imagine he will, but he could.
I still think the best thing for Palace with that is that Wan-Bissaka went to Manchester United. A lot was being said about their back line. Can they cope? And, you know, against Everton, they kept a clean sheet.
And all that hope that Everton had, that's gone now, hasn't it?
Well, you go, your Everton Cup, you go Everton, Leicester, Wolves, no one scored.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe. No one going for the Everton Cup will score all season. Fit Bar Corner, Barry.
Kind of a perfunctory wins for Celtic and Rangers. Celtic beat Motherwell 5-2 at Fir Park. Lee Griffiths back for them. He was on the score sheet. Rangers battered Hibs 6-1 at Ibrox, where Jermaine Defoe scored the first perfect hat-trick of his 20-year career in the game.
Is that
left
so?
Foot, right foot header. And he was very pleased with himself for it. And why not? But he said, you know, this not every day you see me scoring with a header. You know, he's doing an impression of Trevor Brooking, who also didn't score many headers, you know. And yeah, he came off after scoring his hat-trick and was replaced by Alfredo Morales, who got two. So I think the shock result of the weekend was St Mirren beating Aberdeen 1-0, and Yuri Djorkaeff was in the crowd to see his son Owen, who's an unused sub for St Mirren, so that's a good win for them. And transfer wise, Yannick Bolasie, who's no sort of surplus to requirements at Everton, he's been linked with Celtic. And James Forrest, Celtic's midfielder, James Forrest, is possibly on his way to Zenit St. Petersburg.
Did you see the ball going down the advertising
yes.
hoarding, the sort of Toblerone-shaped one?
Yes, I did. And a little ball boy had to scurry down like an American grunt going down a hole or a tunnel in Vietnam to go in after the ball. And yeah, it was, I was rather hoping that while he was in there, someone would turn it up. But I'm assuming there's a bottom on it, which there may not have been. It's, you know, three-sided.
That's true. He might have just been able to walk out rather than just being stuck.
But then surely he'd have just lifted it to get the ball out.
That's true.
Mm.
I was just looking up the spelling of Owen Djorkaeff, and I was hopeful.
It was O-W-E-N?
Yeah, it was named after Owen Coyle, but sadly not O-A-N.
Okay. Yeah. Right, well, that'll do for part two. Part three will begin with the Football League. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton Athletic, the only two sides in the Championship with a 100% record after two games. Fulham and Cardiff bounced back with wins after they both lost their first games last weekend. Fulham beating Blackburn 2-0 with a banger from Tom Kearney. He was given about a fortnight and several square miles to pick out the corner, and a tap-in from Alexander Mitrovic. Cardiff beat Luton 2-1. I'm sorry about that, Faye.
No,
Isaac,
you're not.
Isaac, I'm not at all. Isaac Vassell grabbing
old
the winner.
Old player of ours as well.
It's like it was scripted. In the 96th minute as well. He is the cousin of Darius. Darius Vassell, not Darius from Popstars. where were you? You were at QPR.
I was at QPR, yeah.
Did you have a nice time?
It was a feisty game at QPR. It was, finished 1-1 in the end. I think QPR probably could have nicked it.
Who were they playing?
Huddersfield Town in a fiery coral strip, and I can just see Baz readying himself.
I'm just wondering
if you sit up. You were looking so relaxed, not engaged at all, and then
I was watching.
You saw your opportunity.
Gillette Soccer Saturday, Faye. I was just wondering if you discovered who scored for QPR yet.
It was Grant Hall.
Okay,
but I couldn't see. So listen, I wouldn't normally defend. If I make a mistake, I will always be the first person to put my hand up and say I made a mistake. What was annoying is that I couldn't even make a mistake with that because I was like, I can't see. QPR strip drives me nuts. Blue and white hoops and gold letters. So down the far end, you cannot see. So you're waiting. And normally, so this is how sad I am. I have a little pair of children's binoculars that I take to games with me. So that if there's a free kick or a corner and there's, you know, a lot of bodies in the box, I can at least see who's likely to get the last touch. The problem was I was on standby because I was supposed to be given an update because QPR had just had two great chances. So I had my back to the action anyway because I was looking down the camera. And so I just didn't see it. And I also had an R on Naki Wells who'd just come on. So I was scrolling down Naki Wells on my pad. And then all of a sudden the ball's in the back of the net. And I was like, okay, well, that looked like one of the two centre-halves, but they've both got brown hair and they're both tall. That's really helpful.
Now, we're trying to build your role here. You haven't taken our advice to say holy Carruthers whenever there's been a goal, which I think would be really good for you. But if you had a thing like your opera glasses, a monocle or your Fisher-Price binoculars, and every time they came to you, you turn around.
Well, that was the thing.
It's a really good idea, Faye.
That could have happened. As it was, my cameraman was in shot when they came to me because he was trying to work out who'd scored as well on my behalf. So you just got the side of his head. I purposely had put them down because I thought, God, can you imagine what an absolute geek I'd look like if I've got my blue binos?
Absolutely. I think you should have that. You should have all sorts, like Inspector Gadget. By the end of the season, you have all sorts of contraptions. So you can't see an ear trumpet, everything.
A wing mirror for when you're facing the wrong way.
Wing mirror is a great idea, isn't it? I know that the FA have charged Huddersfield with breaking kit and advertising rules over their Paddy Power sponsorship deal and publicity stunt. They wore the shirt with the sash in a pre-season friendly at Rochdale. Which the FA says was in breach of regulations. A tweet from Jason, amongst others. How dare a team-involved betting company as a publicity stunt should be kicked out of the Skybet Championship? I do wonder if, because the FA investigated it, I almost wonder if the FA didn't realise it was a stunt, felt embarrassed, and then thought they should investigate it because they had a sense of humour failure. But
well, it's more publicity for everyone's favourite banter bookie, isn't it? So that's the main thing.
Did anyone see the bizarre tweets from a Hull City fan? Daniel Moyer, he tweeted a really long thread after Hull beat Reading on Saturday after an undercover security guard approached him at half-time. He was spoken to as part of spot checks into unauthorised data gathering at EFL matches. But the thread itself, it's too long to read out. Basically,
I've read it. Basically, in a nutshell, he was criticised or sanctioned for just being on his phone during the game.
Yeah, he said, I was texting a few friends and relatives who can't make it to games these days, just the odd update on how the game was going. I was mainly telling my girlfriend what I thought of Hull forward Tom Eves' haircut. And some FBI agent said, if you keep texting, we'll throw you out. Very strange.
Is that because they thought he was part of some sort of betting syndicate or something
like that? So an EFL spokesman said, on initial review of this particular incident, all procedures and protocols were followed, but clearly there's still some work to be done to ensure these checks are conducted appropriately and sensitively. In a statement, Hull City said they'd investigate how the check was handled and how the scout spotting program could be improved at the KCOM Stadium. I sort of understand the idea, but you know.
Everybody's on their phones nowadays. Well, how are they going to police that? It's so bizarre.
I don't know.
And you would have thought that if you were part of some, you know, nefarious betting syndicate, you'd be a bit more, you'd have like a headset or something like that, because they're pretty much, when they're doing those things, they're reading out, you know, the balls in this. They're doing it to be ahead of the betting markets, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
That's why they do it.
It's a big thing in tennis. It's called court siding. It's not illegal, but it's
unethical. You've got like a split second, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then,
well, if a point is scored, say you're serving to me and you get an ace, I have a headset on, or, you know, concealed under a hood, because you get turfed out if you're caught doing it. But you can relay information to someone somewhere else, and they can get a bet on, because you can bet on individual points in tennis. So you can get a bet on before the umpire has entered the score, recorded it, and it's been therefore sent to bookies everywhere. Okay. So as I say, it's not illegal, but it is unethical. But because you're taking money off bookies, nobody cares, because they're unethical as well.
Right. In League One, three sides with 100% records, Blackpool, Lincoln and Fleetwood, five sides on 0 points. Bury, obviously, on minus 12, having played 0. Bolton on minus 11, played 2. Bolton's League One game against Coventry finally took place, despite tickets only going on sale 28 hours before kickoff. Bolton fielded their youngest ever side, an average age of 19, in collecting their first point of the season from a goalless draw. Their boss, Phil Parkinson, has urged Lawrence Bassini to, quote, leave the club alone after he was awarded a court order blocking its sale. We obviously just hope it all gets fixed at Bolton and at Bury as quickly as possible. In League Two, a very West Country look to the top of the table. Plymouth, Swindon and Exeter, two wins from two. Oldham, Stevenage and Scunthorpe on 0 points. Cambridge United have drawn both games 0-0. Could we go through a whole season of goalless draws?
46.
You'd stay up. Invincibles.
Yeah.
Be glorious.
Well, Sunderland are doing the same, except with 1-1 draws.
Not as fun.
But I think they had 17 last season games. They drew 1-1, or 16 or 17. And they've drawn both their opening games this season 1-1.
I was just looking at you. How's that not more fun when you've at least got two goals in the game opposed to none?
There is something glorious about getting to about 30 matches and you haven't scored or conceded. Your defence getting furious with your attackers. Apparently the record is 4 or 5 goalless draws in a row.
You'll get Wilson down there if it continues.
Yeah, you're right, because goals are overrated.
Yeah.
He'd love it there. It was the extra preliminary round of the FA Cup. Do you want some selected results?
Yes.
Avro 3, Litherland Remica 4.
Litherland's in Liverpool, isn't it?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good knowledge.
Binfield 3, United Services Portsmouth 2. Street 4, Odd Down 1. Wilmslow United 2, Roman Glass St George 3. Good win for Roman Glass St George. And the big derby, Coventry Sphinx 1, Coventry United 1. But there are about 3,000 games. In Ligue 1, Lyon top of the table after a 3-0 win at Monaco. Cesc Fabregas sent off after half an hour. It was VAR reviewed, but he raked his leg down Léo Dubois' Achilles. He initially got a yellow card.
His whole leg, or just the end of his leg, the bit with the studs sticking out of the boot on, that was covering it?
The whole leg.
Okay.
Richard Jolly writing, Cesc Fabregas has been sent off in his side's opening league fixture in the 2017-18 and 2019-20 season. No wonder Maurizio Sarri didn't pick him in the Premier League until October the 28th last season. From Op to Jean, Monaco have conceded the first goal of the Ligue 1 season in 3 of the last 4 seasons. PSG won 3-0. Good confidence-boosting win for them. They beat Nîmes with goals from Cavani, Mbappe and Angel Di Maria. Wins also for Lille and Saint-Étienne, the rest of last season's top four. A defeat for André Villas-Boas in his first game in charge of Marseille, who went down 2-0 at home to Reims.
At the PSG game, Neymar came in for a lot of stick.
Oh, did he?
Even though he wasn't playing or on the bench for the champions. The fans were chanting uncomplimentary. Basically, they want him to piss off.
Things about his mother as well. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's unnecessary, isn't it?
Not nice. No.
I think if it's either of his parents, they should be directing their ire at it's his dad.
Yes, but absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and a banner was unfurled telling him to get out. Basically.
Okay. Do you think he will get out?
Well.
It's going to be embarrassing if he doesn't.
Yeah.
That's going to be awkward.
Barcelona want him, but they can't get him unless they get rid of Coutinho and a load of money as well.
All right. Finally, Stephanie Frappard will become the first woman to referee a major European men's game. She takes charge of the UEFA Super Cup between Liverpool and Chelsea in Istanbul. This is off the back of her taking charge of the Women's World Cup final last month. She'll be joined by her assistants, Manuela Nicolosi and Ireland's Michelle O'Neill. She became the first woman to referee a Ligue 1 match in April when she officiated a game between Amiens and Strasbourg. She's been promoted to the elite pool of referees for French top flight games for this season. So that is good news.
If I could just nitpick ever so slightly, she's not the first woman to ref a major European game because there's a Swiss woman who has previously refed
it's Europa League, preliminary games.
Okay. Preliminary games, which I would argue are more important than that Super Cup match.
No, fair point. And does anyone think this game is important? Seems the timing of it seems odd.
In terms of it's a Community Shield-esque game in which it's nice if you win it and it doesn't really matter if you lose it. I do think, though, for Chelsea, it's come at a very bad time after what happened on Sunday.
Why not have it as a pre-season friendly? That's not a friendly, if you see what I mean.
Well, I suppose it is pre-season in a few European countries, just not this one.
Yeah, no. True.
I do agree. It's one of those games that's been shunted around the calendar quite a lot over the years. It's a bit of a relic of the past in the fact it used to be between the old European Cup winners and the European Cup winners' cup winners. And it's just been retained as one of the... They actually used to hold it just before the Champions League group stage draw. So it was later in the season. But they seem to have shunted it. And, of course, like FIFA, UEFA like to go on a bit of a roadshow. So it's been in Macedonia, I think it was, last year or the year before. So, yeah, it's, you know, they're reaching their hands across the confederation and someone's having a nice drink out of it, I'm sure.
Finally, from the Tweeting Seagull, can Barry recite the lyrics of Bacchus' new single, Ashley Barnes, in honour of everyone's favourite shithouse in his brace on Saturday? Have you heard the new Ashley Barnes song?
No.
Oh, well, I'll play it to you, and then we'll have discussions between now and Thursday about whether to bring back Barry Does Lyrics. I'm imagining I'm the only person who wants that, but tweet us incessantly, and maybe everyone will change their minds. Are you in?
I don't really care.
Oh, well, that's good. And on that note, thanks so much for coming today, Barry.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Faye.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Cheers, Max.
Back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.